Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the fastest growing segment of our society. To those of you, like me, who know that there's something dreadfully wrong, even destructive, about the religious and political institutions, the media reporting, and the military invasions that are all having such havoc on our nation. We realize that these institutions are part of the problem. They are not the solution. So instead of merely trying to rearrange the deck chairs on our Titanic of state, change their colors from red to blue, we realize that what we need to do is to read behind the headlines to understand who is perpetrating what and why, so that we understand where our planet is headed over these next 5 to 15 years. And that's why, because those things don't sound very hopeful, that we're going to seek hope in the one place that it can be found and trusted, relied upon. And that is why in our second hour we will engage God on His terms through evidence and reason, examining closely His testimony regarding His covenant. Words wielded wisely provide the answer for almost everything that ails us, from economic ruin to terrorism, from religious myths to political hypocrisy. Our number, if you would like to participate in this discussion, is 877-300-7645. Kenya's president this morning reported that they had ended the four-day bloody siege that had been perpetrated by Muslims at Nairobi's Westgate Shopping Center. The five attackers were shot dead. The 11 suspects who had aided and abetted them were now in custody. The quote was, "Kenya has shamed and defeated our attackers." He couldn't say that the problem is Islam. He didn't say that we are going to expose and condemn the religion that motivated this horror. He just said, "We have shamed and defeated our attackers," as if the religion was represented by these 16 boys. He said the losses were immense, confirming that 61 civilians and 6 soldiers died. Horrible. It's going to have 3 days of national mourning in Kenya. They're trying to clean them all to find additional bodies. They expect that death toll and the number of wounded to increase substantially. Some 175 people were seriously injured in the attack, in addition to the 62 that remain, or as part of the 62, that remain under critical care watch in hospitals. The president of Kenya said, "I promise that we shall have full accountability for the mindless destruction, the deaths, the pain, the loss, the suffering we have all undergone as a national family. These cowards will meet justice, as will their accomplices, their patrons, wherever they are." You know, it sounds very much like George W. Bush when he stood in the rubble of 9/11. Completely ignorant of the nature of Islam. Unwilling to recognize that the Quran was a terrorist manifesto, a declaration of war on all humankind. Unwilling to acknowledge the fact that Muhammad was a terrorist, that he led 75 terrorist raids, and that this event, just like the event of 9/11, had been perpetrated strictly because Muhammad couldn't give Muslims a reason to live. So he gave them a reason to die. Speaking of the dead, at least 18 foreigners were among the dead, including 6 Brits, as well as citizens from France, Canada, the Netherlands, Australia, Peru, India, Ghana, South Africa, and China. Islam is an equal opportunity killer. The group that perpetrated this savage attack was Al-Shabaab. They are the leading Islamic militant group in Somalia. For those of you who have either read or watched the book or movie, Black Hawk Down, for any who have researched what happened when Americans were attempting to provide food and medical care for the Somalians who had been racked by a decade or more of Islamic terrorism, and that the Americans simply wanted to prevent those who were trying to thwart this international humanitarian aid effort from occurring. And in that midst of that process, were slaughtered there. If you want to know what Islam does in terms of enraging people, that is a good place to start. But you know, when you don't identify your enemy, as the Kenyan president did not do, he just said that this was cowards, as they like to write it. Now, when you use words improperly, it doesn't help either. The jihadists, of all things, were not cowards. They knew that they were going to lose their lives to make this point on behalf of their religion. They did it courageously. It's moronically, stupidly, immorally certain. It wasn't a moral act. It was a stupid act. It was an uncivilized act. It was a barbarian act. But it was not a cowardly act. And most have met justice. They are dead. As for their accomplices and their patrons and full accountability, what do you think the likelihood is that the president of Kenya is going to do what no head of state has done thus far? And to say that I've done the research, I've read the Hadith, I've read the Quran, and let there be no doubt, the problem is Islam. This religion turns men into savages. Speaking of savages, there's 11 Islamist rebel groups in Syria that have announced today that they do not recognize the authority of the main opposition alliance, the National Coalition. You know, there's this growing trend in the West, particularly in the United States and Europe, and proxied through Qatar, Kuwait, and Saudi Arabia, that there is a vast array of freedom fighters in Syria that are fighting the horrific dictatorship of Assad. But that's just not true. The National Coalition is nothing but a group of Syrians that have been stationed in Turkey to beg for money, to beg for weapons, to create the illusion that there is a genuine freedom-fighting coalition in that country. Well, the boots on the ground, in this case in Syria, are cobbled together coalitions of mujahideen. They are fundamentalist Islamic groups. They are jihadist. And they have no desire whatsoever, even if it provides them with more weapons than they already have, of creating the illusion that they're under the auspices of a national coalition. A joint statement from the 11 Islamist groups said that that all groups formed abroad without having returned to the country do not represent us. They also called for an opposition to unite under, guess what, an Islamic framework. So much for the statements of Senator John McCloud. Do you think he's going to apologize? So much for the statements from Secretary of State Kerry. Do you think he's going to apologize and say, oh, well, I guess I was wrong about the majority of the fighters in Syria being freedom fighters, moderates, peace-loving Muslims, as opposed to those fighting under an Islamic framework. Islamist rebels have become increasingly prominent, the BBC article reads, in the conflict in Syria, and they are believed to command tens of thousands of fighters. They represent virtually all of the fighters. The signatories include members of the Free Syrian Army, as well as more radical Islamists, among them the powerful al-Nusra Front, which has links to al-Qaeda. The al-Nusra Front, the head of the al-Nusra Front, is one of the few individuals in the world that actually said, you know, I respect Anwar al-Zahari. I think that his message is sound, and I will listen to anything he has to say. It's one of the very few. Al-Nusra Front is one of the very few organizations, maybe the only Islamic terrorist organization anywhere in the world that actually claims to have allegiance to Al-Qaeda. And they are the dominant force there in Syria. No one even comes close to their number of mujahideen and jihadists. What's interesting, of course, is even the Free Syrian Army, you know, that has been the group that the Secretary of State and the President and Senator John McClown collectively have held up and say, I know these folks. They're good people. They're just freedom fighters. They want democracy. Well, they were one of the signatories that said, no. We're not freedom fighters. We're fighting for Islam. We're fighting for Sharia. We're here to impose a Islamic state. That's why we're here. Even the Free Syrian Army. This news comes amid fighting on the ground between the Islamic State of Iraq in the Levant, an offshoot of Al-Qaeda. You know, I have gone out of my way to try to point out that Al-Qaeda is meaningless, and the very mention of Al-Qaeda is misleading. It creates this myth that the perpetrators of terror and of mass murder around the world are doing so based upon an affinity with Al-Qaeda and acting upon Al-Qaeda ideology. And that's just not true. Osama bin Laden was a lonely man. No one was listening to him. All of his communications were laments where he said, you know, there are three Al-Qaeda, quote-unquote, branches that have usurped the name of my organization, but they do not listen to me. They aren't doing any of the things that I want them to do, and the things they are doing, I have no desire for them to do. Al-Qaeda as an organization became meaningless other than as a brand name that was effective in unifying jihadists to join an organization and was effective by the United States being able to focus a war on Al-Qaeda as opposed to Islam. But other than that, they have no influence anywhere in the world. The only Islamic terrorist organizations that even acknowledge that Anwar al-Zawahiri has influence over them are those that are fighting in Syria. In an informed and rational world, this would have been a death knell to those who believe that the Syrian conflict is a battle between good and evil, between freedom fighters and a ruthless dictator. In a video statement published online on Tuesday, the 11 most powerful Islamist groups declared that they rejected the Istanbul-based Western-backed national coalition. Quote, therefore, the national coalition and its transitional government led by Ahmed Tomei do not represent us and will not be recognized. The statement also called on all military and civilian forces to unite under a clear Islamic framework based upon Sharia. And that should be the sole source of legislation. End quote. It's over. If you're informed and you're rational, then you recognize that what President Barack Hussein Obama wanted to do until he was thwarted by the actions of Vladimir Putin would have been suicidal. It would have been another blunder, this one greater even than the blunder of invading Afghanistan and Iraq. And this blunder would have been far greater because the consequence was World War III. In Syria, we have a civil war. The civil war is a direct result of a previous blunder by the United States. The Americans invaded Iraq. They replaced a military dictatorship under Saddam Hussein, who is very, very similar to Assad. And they gave the country to the Shiite clerics. It is now Iran West. And because of that, Syria, which had previously been a client of Iraq, is now controlled by Iran. That caused the Sunni fiefdoms like Saudi Arabia and Qatar to be concerned about their very survival, because Shia and Sunni Islam have been at war with each other since their religion's conception. Yahweh told us that Ishmael's descendants would raise their hand against their brother, and their brother's hands would be raised against them while they lived in hostility with the whole world. So as a result of America's invasion of Iraq, we now have the Syrian civil war. But it is a proxy war. It is a war that has Europe and America on the side of Saudi Arabia and Qatar, funneling weapons to the Mujahideen, who are Islamic jihadists who have a singular goal, which is the imposition of an Islamic state ruled under the most repressive legal system ever conceived, Sharia. So if the United States had bombed Assad and continued to arm the rebels, the result would have been to have taken what was a secular dictatorship and we would have replaced it with Sharia law, with a state very similar to Libya, where gangs of Mujahideen and jihadists now control that country. Unbelievably stupid. And to think that he was stopped from what would have grown into World War III by Putin, who said, let's just destroy the chemical weapons. Now, I said this would have ended up in World War III because on the other side of this divide, you have Iraq and Iran in league with China and Russia. And they're in league with China and Russia for the same reason that the United States and Europe are in league with Qatar and Saudi Arabia. Oil. And so Soviet warships had been placed between Syria and the American fleet. Not only that, but what you had as a result of this is the Russians increasing their protection and support of Syria. Their client, because not that they care about Syria, but because they care about their relationship with Iran because of the oil and gas in the Caspian Sea. This would have led to World War III. The president yesterday said that the world was more secure now than it was 5 years ago, presenting himself as if he was the ultimate peacemaker, the man responsible for this security, because, of course, he came into power 5 years ago. And yet, he was one phone call away from igniting World War III. Had the United States bombed Syria on behalf of these jihadists, it would have been the first battle of World War III. Europe and the United States against Russia and China in a proxy war between Sunni and Shia Islam. It would have ultimately led to the demise of our planet. That's how close we came to annihilating ourselves. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Well, one of the great myths of our world has been shattered. It is a myth that came within a whisper of engaging the world in World War III. That myth is that there ever was a moderate fighting alliance in Syria that was actually warring on behalf of democracy and that wanted a pluralistic Syrian state where the outcome would be similar to what we find in the West. That a country where all faiths could live in harmony, where a country that wouldn't be at a constant state of war against Israel, a country where women's rights would be protected and people would have a voice in their governance. That was the myth that was being perpetrated, and that we were told that the United States should continue to provide weapons not only for those freedom fighters who were part of the Free Syrian Army, but that we should also engage in bombing Assad, this ruthless dictator that gassed his own people. That would have begun World War III. Now, a lot of myths in that, and make no mistake, virtually every war that the world engages in, particularly those that the United States has engaged in, are all started based on lies. Assad did not choose to gas his own people. It is possible, I'd say it's unlikely, but it is possible that the 1951 now retired rocket system that was used to send the sarin gas into that community just 3 miles from the presidential palace, unguided rockets, by the way, and a system that the Syrian army no longer uses, was retired almost 20 years ago, that was fired by some group associated with Assad, but we know for absolute certain that Assad did not give that order, and that every time he had been asked in the past, he had said unequivocally no. And yet, this lie remains, it's uncorrected around the world. No one is willing to speak out and say, that is an absolute lie. You're painting this one man as if he chose to use chemical weapons on little children. He did not make that call. The likelihood and all the evidence at this point points to the fact that those rockets were fired by members of the al-Nusra Front to bring the United States into the war, because they were losing. But the fact is, the caricature that is being painted of Assad, having chosen to ruthlessly murder his own people, something that Obama repeats with reckless abandon, saying that no country can be run by an individual who would gas his own people, it's a lie. That part is absolutely known for certain to be a lie. And so is the myth that those who are seeking to replace Assad are better than he is, that they're freedom fighters. No, they're fighting for submission. They're fighting for surrender. They're fighting for Islam. That's what Islam means. They said that we reject the National Coalition. We reject any governance other than Sharia. They said that they are fighting solely under an Islamic framework. Their video that they produced to reject the Western-backed, Istanbul-based national coalition urged all members of the opposition to reject division in the interest of the Ummah. What is the Ummah? That is the Islamic community. So it said, reject the secular group, all of us. And if you don't reject the secular group, you will be considered the enemy. So reject anything that isn't the Ummah, the Islamic community. The BBC's Kevin Connolly in Beirut says that the declaration reflects two growing trends. One is the increasing influence of Islamist rebel movements within the coalition fighting President Bashar al-Assad. The other is the Islamization of the other groups, including members of the Free Syrian Army. And that is really the only surprise in any of this. To say that the influence of Islam in the rebel movements is increasing is like saying that once you have 95% saturation, and once you get to 96 or 97%, that is a meaningful increase. The presence of fundamentalist Islam amongst the rebels has always been in the high 90% of those picking up weapons to fight Assad. The fact that the Free Syrian Army, which is the one thing that is touted out there in the West, particularly by Senator McClown, as being the peace-loving freedom fighters, now that it is known to be predominantly fundamentalist Islamic, fighting now under the acknowledged banner of Sharia, well, that myth now has evaporated. In a rational and informed world, the American people would rise up against their president and impeach him on coming within a whisper of engaging this country in a war on behalf of fundamentalist Islam, on behalf of Sharia law. The statement is an attempt to shift the political balance of power in favor of those fighting on the ground and is an indication that jihadist groups like the al-Nusra Front are very much at the center of the conflict. An awkward reality for Western powers, the British correspondent says. Yeah, an awkward reality. An awkward reality. Yes, the Western powers want to continue to arm the Sharia-loving fundamentalist Islamic jihadists, and it's an awkward reality that they just happen to be the enemy. They just happen to be the very foe that these same nations are saying that they're engaged in a war of terrorism against. Arm them in one country, fight them in another. It is an awkward reality. It's a hell when truth gets in the way of a good lie. He then said the inclusion of the core of what had been called the National Coalition's force of now the Free Syrian Army and, of course, the al-Nusra Front and the nine others who are the signatories of this agreement, saying that they have no allegiance whatsoever with the National Coalition. They don't need its weapons. They don't need anything from it, and they are completely rejecting it. He says that what that means is that for all practical purposes, a moderate Islamic coalition has ceased to exist. Now, that's the truth. It is an awkward reality for those who would want to promote the lie. Now, think about President Barack Hussein Obama's statement, calling inferring strongly that since the world is more stable 5 years into his dominion as President of the United States, that he is to receive credit for having stabilized the world. Consider the world, how it has changed in those 5 years. In those 5 years, you've had Tunisia reject a secular dictatorship and replace it with Islamic governance. Islamic governance that has sought to assassinate its two secular rivals. You have in Libya a secular dictator being replaced by marauding militias of mujahideen and jihadists. They are now the destabilizing force in most of northern Africa, including Mali, where they are the arms merchants to jihadists throughout the region. It was there that they killed the American ambassador and four other Americans. Hardly a more stable world. In fact, you could not have a less stable country than Libya. You look at Egypt, which 5 years ago was part of the civilized world. They were under the control of Mubarak, who was a secular dictator. And then based upon Obama's speech, the fundamentalist Muslims rose up as the Muslim Brotherhood. Two-thirds of the people voted for the most fundamentalist party. They took the country to Sharia law. They bankrupted economically. And now there's been a military coup. If you think a military coup brings stability, then congratulations, you are a member of Barack Hussein Obama's world. 5 years ago, there was no civil war in Syria. They weren't murdering each other with reckless abandon. Now, if you think that a civil war that brought the United States within a hiccup of World War III is a more stable world, then I would like to know what color the sky is on your planet. Of course, during these 5 years, Iraq has rekindled its eternal civil war between Sunni and Shia Islam. Pakistan has become a killing field, with now the second in control, the co-founder of the Taliban, being released just this last week. Afghanistan is lost. The Taliban have been welcomed back into power. It's hardly a more stable world. You have Iran within a whisper of completing its nuclear ambitions because the United States removed its only bow. You have Qatar and Saudi Arabia weaponizing Mujahideen throughout the region. Yeah, it's a more stable world, all right. You know, there are people who benefit from chaos. There are people who benefit from war. It's why Jefferson was so opposed to war, why Jefferson was so opposed to standing armies and the patriotic lies that go along with them, the fraud, the abuse, the concentration of power. Obama's world is more stable because the more the world is in conflict, the more he coalesces power around his misguided ideas. But the world? No, it's on the cusp of blowing apart. Who's the largest contributor to that? Of course, the United States, the weapons merchants of the world. Stability would also include monetary stability. And during these 5 years, America has gone from being $10 trillion in debt to $17 trillion in debt. Europe has all but destroyed the value of the euro. Nations have been floundering economically as well. We'll return to Shattering Myths after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. The CIA has begun delivering weapons directly to the rebels in Syria. That is a comment out of the Obama administration, according to U.S. officials, and also to Syrian officials. The shipments began streaming into the country beginning 4 weeks ago, along with separate deliveries of weapons by the Department of State of armed vehicles, assault vehicles, and other gear. The United States had previously been providing weapons to the Mujahideen, the Sharia-loving jihadist, through Qatar and Saudi Arabia, but we have taken the middleman out and are now arming the Muslims directly. Nothing says peace more than weapons. The UN, as we know, published a report on what happened in the Ghouta area of Damascus, and they said that they had examined blood, hair, urine, and rocket samples, and that they concluded that sarin gas was delivered by M14 artillery rockets. And the United States immediately said, as did France, as did the UK, well, see, that proves that Assad ordered this strike against his own people. Actually, what it proves is that that probably did not occur. The M14 artillery rocket was designed in 1951 by the Soviet Union. It was taken out of service in 1990. The weapon is not even remotely accurate. There is no guided capability of any kind on this rocket. To think that Assad would have said, you know, what I want you to do is I want you to fire a rocket over my capital city within a few miles of my own house and to land deadly sarin gas within a few miles of my home, that's really, it would be a great idea. And what I want you to do, even though we have all of these sophisticated delivery systems, I want you to pull out of retirement a 1951 unguided rocket system to do it. You see, the M14 is not a rocket in the sense that we think of rockets in America as very sophisticated, large machines with elaborate guidance systems. No. The M14 is the kind of thing that you have, the rocket itself is, you know, maybe 6 inches or so, 8 inches in diameter. It is probably 2.5 feet long, maybe 3 feet long. It goes in tubes. The rocket launcher can, and this is a variant of the M14 artillery rocket, it goes into what looks more like a mortar, but it's a cluster of mortars. They can have as many as 16 of these mortars tubes all, you know, ready to fire. They typically are put in the back of military vehicles. They can be trailered on just a trailer behind a vehicle. What you find in videos, reports shot with smartphones all over Syria and previously in Libya, is that a slightly smaller version with this, and that's the variant where you take the 16 tubes and you cut off some of the tubes to diminish the weight and you end up with 9 to 12 tubes, that they sit in the back of pickup trucks. And it's an artillery rocket as opposed to just a mortar because it reach loads. It's you just kind of take this thing, you set your truck so that the rockets are facing kind of in the direction you want to go. You hope you have a map and a compass, and you say, all right, you know, there's no GPS here. This is just put this thing, aim your truck in the kind of the direction you want these things to go, and hope to hell that you get lucky. That's what was used in this particular case. And yet the world said, oh, right, well, that proves that Assad did it. No, it's evidence that he probably didn't do it. Well, they said what the rockets were fired from a area that he controlled. Well, it's not even certain of that. This is not the kind of thing that, you know, okay, if you have a major missile launch, that the United States can track what happened. You know, we're talking about something that has about the propensity and signature of a howitzer. You know, this is an artillery shell, essentially, that is coming out of a mortar-like tube that's breech-loaded. It is a tiny weapon. It's not the kind of thing that you're going to track effectively by a satellite. Much of what the United States has said is a lie.